Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight Studios on the hill, corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard. Come over, check them out, follow them online at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Book yourself a tour today at GaslightSTL.com. And just check out the beautiful facilities they have. They're a great recording studio attached to a bar-type setting where you can hang out and watch your favorite bands play, or you can, if you have a band or a solo artist or whatever the case might be, there's a lot of great opportunity to get in there and record. So get involved, check them out online, and then come out Sunday, October 9th, over to the Gaslight and see Cavo. They're recording. It's the 300th episode of Rock Paper Podcast. We're going to throw a big party over there. We got great vendors like Four Hands Brewery, Urban Chestnut Brewing, Smoking Hot Cigars, Jameson Irish Whiskey, Cha Cha Chow. It's just going to be a good time, good hangout. Of course, Cavo will be live in studio. They will be doing a podcast interview for the show, and we'll also gonna do a live acoustic jam and record it by Loft Sessions. So you can come out, be a part of all that, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. So that's Sunday, October 9th at Gaslight. Check it out, GaslightSTL.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio, it's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Leslie Sanazero, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Thank you.
your crying eyes. Let the rain wash away the hard and dusty night. May you rise with the flowers of the day.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with Leslie Sanazero, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Good.
All right. It's always nervous, so some of those different names. But yeah, welcome to the show. I'm very excited to get to hang out today, get to talk with you. We've been talking here a little bit off mic, but I was saying how for me, the show is always fun to get to sit and talk to people in a more quieter setting. But we've been running around a lot of the same circle of friends and shows and stuff. And I see you. I saw you at Big Muddy Blues Festival, and in Yakis, and I see you around town and things a couple times. But usually either we're playing or there's music playing or whatever. And so it's nice to sit down somewhere a little quieter and get to know each other a little better. And but anyway, so thank you for thanks for doing the show today. So.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I guess a lot of these I like to start with just a little background. Anybody that doesn't know about Leslie, this would be a nice little introduction, and for me too to learn more about you. But you were saying something, hometown in Cuba, Missouri? Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Cuba, Missouri, about an hour and a half southwest of here on 44.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then what bringing you to St. Louis, is just for more of them into the music scene, or
I left the area for college, and then I moved here in a more full-time kind of way. I always loved St. Louis, so I'd always kind of like dabble in coming around. When I would be like 19, I would come and stay for the summer.
Sure.
And then I did a couple semesters at Webster at one point, and before I moved to Philadelphia. But back in 2003, I came back in a more regular way, and I lived here at that point for like 8 or 9 years, and then I went to upstate New York, and I lived there for a little bit. But mm-hmm. I've been back here now for a few years now.
Yeah.
And, so a lot of years in St. Louis. This is definitely my home.
Sure. Yeah, I call St. Louis home, even though I'm technically Wentzville, St. Charles County out there, and that's all.
Well, you're definitely St. Louis.
Yeah, right. Right. But I, it's funny. Like I, growing up, 45 minutes outside of town, but mm-hmm. I just started getting down here a lot more, last 10 years or so. I'm coming down here a lot mm-hmm. for music and stuff, so.
Yeah, we have a great music scene. It brings
sure.
a lot of people down into the city, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things, even now still, like, it's just, again, with the show, it's kind of keeps pushing me to keep just constantly discovering new music and new people
yeah.
making music in our town, and
mm-hmm.
and I love it. I have a great time. Like I said, always just finding new bands all over the place, so
yeah,
they call St. Louis home, so
it's interesting. I've had conversations with a number of different musicians recently where we sit down and say, you know what, there are so many bands that I don't know the name of. I see their name, and I realize I don't know who they are. And I really have to work to get outside my circle to see all the new music that's being played in St. Louis, because
sure.
there's so much of it. And even as musicians and people who seek out music all the time, like you, there's so much to see. We actually said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to start pulling up schedules and go to clubs that, we go to maybe every once in a while, or clubs that we've never been to, on a night when we don't know any of the bands on the bill.
Right.
And we're just going to go and hang out there and
yeah.
try to pick it up, because that cross, referencing, cross, hybriding of,
sure.
of music here in town is, our scenes are all so strong and powerful in their own genres. I can only imagine, if there was if there was more crossover collaboration, what might
yeah,
come out of that?
Definitely. And I'm, not pat myself on the back, but that's a lot of
you
what
should
I'm,
pat yourself on the back.
That's what I'm trying to do a little bit. I'm trying to,
uh-huh.
I'm trying to kind of break down some of those, and it's slowly started, but I've had people, I've shared things on online or whatever, people will be like, you know, hey, I'm glad you shared that because I didn't, you know, I didn't know of them in town and everything else, but they're really great and it's something different than I'm a part of that, you know, so the people are discovering, you know, music along there with me. So that's really exciting for me, but, you know, I'm just happy for my friends that are kind of getting, you know, people are taking notice of my other friends and stuff, so. But yeah, no, I agree. There's some super talented people all over this place, with, you know, involved different genres and all these different parts. But there are, it is, you know, we have like a Cherokee scene. We have a, like, you know, people play over pops on the east side, rock stuff over there, and then you got, you know, Grand or Washington and stuff. You got a couple different like spots, and of course Broadway and things. You got a couple of different spots in town where all these music venues and things, and people are, you know, it's hard to, especially well as musicians too, when you're playing all the time, it's difficult to go see some of the other music. But
And you know what, if I could just say real quick, speaking of South Grand, it's so instinctual to insert South Grand in with these neighborhoods that have a lot of music, because the whole area is populated with a ton of musicians.
Sure.
Jeremy and I were talking the other day about how there's a pawn shop that's going out of business right next to the Mekong on Grand. Okay. And we were talking about, what do you think is going to go in there? You know, talking about different businesses. And, of course, like the first thought is, oh, probably another restaurant. And we both said, you know, we live near here. We drive down South Grand every day. It doesn't even occur to me that there's not a music venue.
Yeah.
On South Grand, in the main strip of South, the main drag there. There's not a one. There is. There's CBGB. But that's one particular kind of music. And it's not, you know, South Grand is so alive and vibrant. It'd be so great to see another music venue on South Grand.
For sure. I think somebody else said something the other day about, with like Cherokee, how there's like, you know, there's so much music and food and everything, but there's like, it's not really like a diner or like a kind of a late night thing. Or something. So they were talking about how like it'd be nice to have something like that for everybody to go to after their gigs.
After their gigs, sure.
So so anyway, it'd be you know, there's a lot of people thinking, you know, trying to come up with some good spots for their neighborhoods and stuff. So.
I need to bring that music into every neighborhood.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's one goal. That's like a, you know, bucket list thing for me is hopefully get to that point where I can open my own venue of sorts and do some
music. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So
that's great.
That's the dream. I mean, I'm hoping the only thing, like, some people said different things about it, but I just think hopefully I'm doing it different than anybody else. Like, you know, like, if I ever get to that point, you know, at least I'll have like this just huge list of all these musician friends that can play there all
that's
the time.
That's right. You stuff, can just pick up the phone and be like, hey, you want to come roll down here and play tonight?
Yeah,
and
sure.
You know, you'll have a list of people longer than you need that will show up and do it for you.
Yeah, that's the dream. Yeah. So hopefully, maybe on South Grand, who knows?
Well, let us musician types know what we can do to help.
Yeah, I think I'm.
We like music venues.
Sure. I think I'm quite a bit of ways off still, but yeah, that's you know, I'd love to get to that point where I could do something like that. So
awesome.
The logic is to quit paying for music. You know, going to venues, bring it all to me and stuff, so and pay for it that way. So like, but yeah. Anyway, so is music's playing. You've been playing for quite a while. I did, and you do. How long? When did you start playing piano and stuff?
You know, I didn't seriously start playing piano till college. Mm-hmm. I studied music from a pretty young age, but. But piano was something that just kind of came around almost by accident, in that I was studying saxophone in college, and then it just occurred to me one day that I really wanted to sing. I didn't want to play a horn anymore. I'd played for 8 or 9 years, and I just kind of felt like I'd come to the end of my line with it. So I started studying jazz as a singer, and having grown up in Cuba, kind of, you know, way out in the country, there just wasn't a lot of jazz out there to hear. But, you know, just like a feeling that you get inside when you meet somebody who's going to be your good friend, or, you know, there's something that, like, just kind of brings chills to the surface of your skin. Jazz was like that for me from the very first time I ever heard swing. I was like, oh my gosh, what is that? Yeah. But again, hadn't grown up listening to a lot of it. And so, you know, in college, you know, things move pretty quick. So, there would be a class or a rehearsal or something, and it'd be the night before, and they'd say, okay, well, tomorrow we're going to do All the Things You Are, My Funny Valentine, you know, Autumn Leaves and whatever else. And I would just be at a loss, you know. I maybe have heard these songs a couple times, but I've never sung them. I didn't know the changes, you know, that kind of stuff, the things that make you able to kind of get inside a song. And so, and again, this was, you know, before the internet was, you know, like something you could just go to the library and pull up. So all there were records, and the library would be closed by that hour, and a piano, you know, with a book of charts. So I would sit and spend late nights at a piano. I knew enough music theory that I could kind of get around a little bit, and I would learn them, you know, as best I could for the next day. So my first piano playing time, where I was really putting in time, was, you know, plunking out jazz melodies and figuring out what chord changes sounded like so I'd feel confident singing over them. Mm-hmm. And then the songwriting and stuff came after. I'd always written songs, but not really on piano the way I do now.
Yeah.
So it was a late start for me. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was 18 when I really started thinking about piano in a more serious way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is that when you're writing is for your songs and stuff, is a lot of it start at the piano and then you figure out lyrics to it, or do you?
That is usually how it is. Even if I have an idea of lyrically what I want to write about, or I have a feeling that I'm kind of, you know, diving into a little bit, I will go to the piano and look for the sounds that support that before I write down specifically what the words will be.
Right.
So yeah, it does usually start. It almost always starts with piano for me.
Sure. I think that's kind of me. I never wrote a song, so I don't know. But I do. It's funny how there was, like, you know, I guess there's no right or wrong way to do any of it. It's just funny how many people come up with their own ways to do it. But I remember hearing Howard Stern's show once. He had Steven Tyler on, and Steven was talking about, you know, because a lot of his lyrics are just crazy stuff. You know, there's not really a story or anything, you know, just words that fit inside the melody and stuff. But, you know, explained why some of his songs or some of the words really don't make sense, because, like, he kind of just, like, scats with the music.
Yes.
And then, and then figures out words that fill in where they're. So, like,
You know, Rebecca Ryan and I, she's a very good friend of mine for a long time, and we've played a lot of music together. We've played in a band we put together called Genevieve for the last couple years, up until very recently. And, you know, as two songwriters and singers fronting the band, we talked a lot about our songwriting processes. And one thing that we both had in common was something really similar to what you're saying. You start by improvising the melody over, and she does it the same way, kind of starting with chords, but on guitar.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that your mouth opens at certain spots where you want the melody to be, like a held or sustained pitch. And it's usually a vowel sound of some kind. Well, it always is, because you can't hold a consonant. You can't, but you can, you know, or a. And so, as those vowel sounds kind of form inside the improvising of a melody, you find words that build around that vowel sound, and then when you know what that word is, it kind of helps you lay out the line of what. And P.S. the whole time in your mind, you do have an idea of what you're trying to get across in mind, whether it's, you know, kind of a cerebral idea or a feeling, you know, whichever it is. And you do kind of improvise it into being. It's kind of like sculpting clay, or you know, it's a really neat process. It's kind of intuitive and kind of tuned into the muses a little bit, so you get some input coming in as those things are happening. That's what you hope for anyway, that it's not just you coming up with lines, but that it's some kind of interactive process. And when songs come together like that, I think they're really special.
Yeah. So when when do you get to recording? When do you put out the your first record? Or...
Oh, well, so I have three records that I've already recorded, but I have not recorded anything in the last... I haven't recorded anything since 2011 in the studio, at least nothing that I've released, besides the most recent song Now, which was not a record, it's just one song. So I have been writing these last 2 years quite a lot, actually, and I don't know why I'm dragging my feet on getting back into the studio. I don't know if it's the expense of it or like the amount of time and energy it takes to make a really good record. But that is what I need to be doing. So I really hope that in the upcoming year I'll put out a new record, because I probably have two records worth of material just sitting around now that I haven't recorded yet.
Well, I don't think I was at stuff by Q and the Lou last night, where I saw my friends Shooting with Annie played over there. Are you familiar with them at all?
Is that Annie Linders?
Nah.
Trumpet player?
No.
No. Okay.
This
sorry.
Is There is a female in the band. I don't know her name, but yeah, she plays the violin.
Okay.
But it's like Michael Eisenbys, Kevin Gagnepain, Michael Flynn, Jake Elking. A lot of these guys. Jake plays with El Monstero. John Pizzoni set in on drums, who's from The Urge and El Monstero and Celebration Day. Kevin Gagnepain's El Monstero. Stir. And all, you know, so anyway, all more kind of all pretty big deal rock guys in town. But this is like a different project. They hadn't played in like a year and a half, and they anyway, Michael was up there and he's like, "Yeah, all these songs are off our latest release 6 years ago."
That's how I feel some days. I'm like, no, you can still get, I'm still selling copies of my last record. They're like, oh, cool, when did it come out? 2011.
Yeah, right. But, you know, it happens. We all have lives, you know, things get crazy, and, you know. Again,
yeah.
But like you're saying, expenses are, that's the biggest part of it, I think, for a lot of people, especially independent musicians. It's just, it's difficult to get the funding together to
sure
get
is.
In there and pay for it. So.
It sure is. Yeah, that's true.
Hopefully we'll get to recording. But when so you were saying, we also I mentioned I like the a song called "These Things Do Not Define You." Is that right?
These things do not define you.
Make sure I got the title right. But yeah, you were saying there's a themed obviously to that record, but that song is a little more lighthearted than the rest of it, but you were saying that that's about human trafficking stuff and
that project came around in I guess it was a year before 2010. I know the record came out in 2011, but a lot of people at the time were becoming aware of, the prevalence of human trafficking. I mean, I think most people know that modern day slavery is still in existence, but when you start reading the very personal stories of people who have survived it, it's really heavy, and the oppression is deep, like some other things that, lots of people are dealing with oppression. But that particular issue just kind of settled into my gut, and I wasn't sleeping well, and I was really upset, and I mean, it didn't even occur to me for a good week or two of experiencing that feeling that I would feel a lot better if I played some music. That's always a recurring theme. I feel like my whole life I just learn it over and over again. If something's wrong, you just go play music, and then things feel a lot better. So in trying to kind of balance that out a little bit, I thought, well, a lot of people don't know these stories, and, a lot of people don't even know that this is going on. So I sat down and started writing songs to, hopefully give voice to the stories of people whose voices weren't being heard. Mm-hmm. That was my main goal in writing that record. It was a really deep process, and I actually I did a fundraising project to put out the record, and I used some of those funds to travel to Cambodia and visit with survivors of trafficking.
Oh, wow.
And so I visited four or five different organizations that were working on the ground to help survivors. They were working on prevention and education, and I played music for I played some gigs for I played those songs for girls who were survivors in hopes that, you know, that not only that, you know, to ask, like, am I getting this story right? Is this, you know, is this your voice? Are these your feelings?
Mm-hmm.
But also to let them know that, you know, that there are people on the other side of the planet who knew what was going on, mm-hmm. that they weren't alone. And so These Things Do Not Define You was the first song that I wrote on that album. And real similar to other powerful songs or like first songs on a record, it all kind of came at once and came out kind of quickly. But I knew, like I was mentioning earlier, that the record would be heavy because I felt heavy and the subject was heavy. So I wanted to write something that was inspired, something that was looking ahead to the future of, you know, after these events or any events in our lives that have transpired that have been traumatic are past, you know, chronologically they've happened now,
right.
How we move forward and how we walk into the future and still, you know, have a light step as much as we can,
mm-hmm.
And to look towards the possibility of what the future is always holding for us.
Yeah. You said something that you were contacted to use that song?
Yeah. So a few years back, someone reached out to me online and said, hey, where can I get this CD? I really like These Things Do Not Define You. It's a great song. And so, you know, I hooked them up with the website where they could buy the CD. And then about 8 or 9 months ago, I got an email saying, hey, I know this is really irregular, but I wrote this movie, and I don't know if you remember, but I emailed you like 3 years ago, and I did. I totally remembered his email because it was very kind, and
yeah.
And he said, I've just, you know, I write movies, and I've been looking for a place where I can put that song for the last couple of years, and I think this is the place for it. I think I have a place for it in this new film I'm writing and directing called Virginia, Minnesota. So yeah, it was just a week or so ago that Don Weber, who played trumpet on that track, and I flew up to Minnesota, and we shot a scene where we're playing that song in one of the scenes. So
cool.
That was the first time any of my music had been will be used in a movie that I'm aware of or that I authorized.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, that's really cool that they even, you know, invited you to be a part of it. You know,
yeah,
it is. To essentially act in the film as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Don and I, you know, I think we both kind of had a feeling of, you know, we're not actors. We can only be musicians in this, you know. But that luckily they didn't ask us to speak any lines or anything. We just had to, like, you know, in between songs, pretend like we were talking to some of the extras in the bar or whatever.
So is it going to be on credits, you know, Dawn Weber as herself and Michael as herself?
I think they have to list us in credits.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
That's another kind of a bucket list thing for me. I don't want like a feature role. I just want like one line where I can just come in and like be like
a cameo.
Yeah,
cameo.
Yeah, right. Just to be that guy, like, hey, you know, or whatever, you know, just one simple line, or, you know, be like a pizza delivery guy or whatever, you know, something
like Quentin Tarantino does in his movies.
Yeah.
He just kind of rolls in and does one little thing and then he's out.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Tarantino. He that's one. You know, speaking of, like, you know, hearing songs and thing and visualizing and, you know, kind of, but I feel like Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals, their last record, I felt like there's a couple of songs on there I was like, these belong in like a Tarantino movie. They just I think of like some of the stuff that he does and stuff, and like I was like, these would, you know, lend themselves very well to some of his.
Ooh, we need to hook him up with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, sure. So, but I don't know if it's just, there's sometimes music does it, you know, sometimes it just, you know, I can just accept it for what it is and listen to it as music. But yeah, there mm-hmm. are sometimes a song, certain songs will, you know, inspire me to think about like what, you know, a potential music video or a soundtrack right. or whatever, you know, right. different things that would be associated with it. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that's what's I think that's cool about music. I think it's a really neat opportunity. That's how I'm excited to yeah. I'm excited for you about the
thanks
the film.
Thanks. Yeah, it's it was really fun.
Sure. And so is, you know, it seems to be kind of a trend there, I guess, though, because we're getting into you have a new video, a new song mm-hmm. called Now, part of the Black Lives Matter movement and mm-hmm. stuff. And but with the Cambodia human trafficking and stuff, and then now with this, like, do you find yourself involved in a lot of this political? Or is it just trying to give a voice to some people that...
That's a good question. You know, it occurred to me in working on the new song that, you know, there was a similar kind of... I just kind of felt fiercely compelled to say something. Mm-hmm. And that was the same kind of root feeling as the Daughters of Cambodia project was. But... I don't really think of myself as, you know, as a political artist.
Yeah.
I do feel strongly about certain specific issues that I want to say something about, and I feel like as an artist, I have a responsibility to say something about as
sure.
somebody who's in front of people.
I think that's you know, huge. You have a platform, you have a voice.
Right.
And to do something about it, you know, like not, like I just feel like there's so much pop music today that's, you know, just mm-hmm. about a fictitious thing. You know, like it's not real. It's for me. It's like I don't relate to
uh-huh.
most of that music. You know, it's just like
uh-huh.
it just I don't relate to the big house and cars and all the, you know, all this stuff or whatever.
Right.
It's like, but I, you know,
yeah.
this is real stuff happening in our real lives and. That we all have to deal with, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that's cool that you're taking that step to make it, you know, speak out and stuff about it.
Well, you know, we've all been watching what's been happening in the news in the last couple of years, but certainly, I mean, for hundreds of years, all of this has been going on, and you know, when I think about it, there is a connection between the slavery in Cambodia and slavery that's existing in the modern era, all the way back to historic slavery in this country. And so maybe, you know, that maybe that's the connection. Maybe it's you know, it's that inability that a person would have to exercise freedoms that are their human right that really lights a fire under me and makes me want to stand up and yell something out,
sure.
you know? But, I mean, this song for me came about, was back in July, and there were two shootings of black men by police officers in, like, the same week. Philander Castile was the one who was killed in Minnesota in his car, and you know, I mean, all of the shootings hit us hard, you know, and some of us a lot harder than others too. And I was, you know, it was just too much to stomach, you know. I mean, it's all too much to stomach. But that particular week, I just felt fed up, and like I said, I just felt, you know, really fiercely compelled to write something. And so I was thinking that, and I walked outside and there was a police van on my street, you know, and I live in the city, and there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of police activity. There's a lot of stuff going on down here. And, you know, I saw the police talking to a local bar owner, and they were talking and, you know, couldn't quite figure out what was going on. But given the week's happenings, I thought I would stand there for a minute and just, you know, in case there needed to be a bystander to any incident or whatever, I just, you know, stood there for a second, and luckily, you know, nothing happened, and, you know, the police ended up, you know, saying okay and talking to whoever had called them and then getting back in their vehicle and driving away. But as I walked around the corner to come into my place, one of my neighbors was sitting on his porch, and he looked at me and said, "What's, you know?" He kind of yelled down the street, "Hey, what's going on over there?" And my first response was, "They didn't take anybody." And I said it without even thinking. And as I walked into my place, I was like, "They didn't take anybody. That's a concern in this community. You know, that someone's going to get taken in one way or another." That became one of the lines of the chorus in the song that, you know, lots of people all sing together, who yeah. they're going to take now. And literally just sat down and wrote the song right then. From the moment my fingers touched the keys, it was exactly this progression. The lyrics took me, you know, a day or so to like kind of flesh out or whatever, right. but it wasn't hard to write about that because there's so much to say.
Sure.
So that came about, you know, and, you know, I haven't been an active member of the Black Lives Matter movement here in St. Louis. I've been present at protests, you know, during the Ferguson thing, and, you know, I'm aware of the events that are going on, and I'm always in support, but I myself have not been super active and in the community, like, doing any real work that I felt like was helpful, you know, over the last year, which, you know, really, this is the time to be doing something. There was part of me that thought, oh my gosh, you know, people are going to hear this and they're going to be like, she's not part of that movement. She is, you know, and I don't have all the answers, and I, you know, and I'm trying to become more active, and this is one way that I'm doing that. I feel like I really have learned in this process and speaking to a lot of different people about racism, and especially institutionalized racism in the city of St. Louis and in our community is what we see on a day-to-day basis,
right.
you know, that it really is the responsibility of the privileged people to stand up and say something and to demand that there be change, to say that it is absolutely unacceptable for there to be violence against the public that is so absolutely unwarranted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the work
yeah.
that needs to happen.
So yeah, you went and recorded this. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you learned. Well, I guess you had a bunch of different artists involved in it. The project.
Yes,
a bunch of people.
It was yeah, fantastic.
And you all recorded this at Gaslight
mm-hmm.
a while back.
We did.
Yeah.
The night that I wrote the song, well, actually, I guess it was the next day when I was finishing the words to it. As soon as it was even close to finished, I felt like I really wanted to move fast on it. It wasn't something I wanted to wait until I had a record to release, or I just felt it really important to say something right then because it was the week after those shootings. So I called up JB at Gaslight, and I just told him I really needed to come in and record, that I didn't have any money, and that, you know, but this was a really, really important thing that we needed to do, and
yeah.
he was absolutely on board with it right away, and two or three nights later we went in and recorded it.
Yeah, JB's he's quickly become a real good friend. He's just
uh-huh.
a great guy. Like, now he I don't know, I guess we took notice of each other online through
uh-huh.
Facebook and stuff, but he reached out and wanted to be a part of the show, and now he's you know, sponsoring the show and stuff. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
Yeah,
he is, isn't he? He's just wonderful.
For sure, yeah.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Like, but just been, it was just really cool to find, you know, somebody that wanted to be a part of it, a part of the show, and helping out whatever he could, and like,
uh-huh.
and then now we're throwing a big party together. So like,
when is that? Tell me about that.
This will be October 9th. We're throwing a party over at Gaslight for the 300th episode of Rock Paper Podcast.
Yay! Is that Sunday? Is that
Sunday?
Sunday?
Yeah,
okay.
1 o'clock.
Wow! Sweet.
So
I'll
yeah,
try to be there.
Yeah. Please do. It's going to be fun. Where my guest will be Cavo.
Uh-huh.
Who are more, you know, St. Louis modern rock sound. They had a big hit with a song called Champagne that they
uh-huh.
toured all over the place with in support of that.
Yay.
And did really well for themselves. They got a new record out now. We're going to do a live podcast in front of a studio audience there in front of, you know, the bar.
Awesome.
And then we're going to Loft Sessions is also be there to to film it all, and and they're going to record the acoustic performances. So
yeah,
should be a really cool way to showcase a lot of what St. Louis is doing with the podcast, with Cabo's new record, with Gaslight, and what all they're up to, with Loft Sessions, and we'll also have Four Hands Brewery, Urban Chestnut, Cha Cha Chow. So we'll have a lot of St. Louis vendors on hand too. So,
so will you be in the studio recording space, and the audience will be in the bar like it is when people record their play music?
We're going to kind of just set up on some stools and
awesome.
And record that way. I think that's how we. We haven't. I don't know. I think that's probably what we'll end up doing, just because keep it as easy as possible with the recording and stuff being with having the mics and everything in there. So
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it should be a unique experience for sure. So
cool. That's great.
I've done. Obviously, I was telling you, I've done some of these in Taco Bells and all the other various public places, I've done it in front of an audience, but this will be the first time I've really invited people to come watch it and stuff, so so this will be different, but it's going to be exciting. So, but anyway, Gaslight, like I said, they very cool people, doing really
very cool space.
Yeah.
There's that intimacy of being in the studio. For those people listening that don't know, there's a big glass wall in between the studio and the bar, so people that are coming in to have a drink or a bite to eat, or friends or family or people involved with a recording project or an event, can watch as it's recorded live, which is kind of a unique thing about Gaslight. And as somebody who's on the inside of that, that's where we recorded the song, There is something that's still intimate about the studio part of it, but when you open your eyes, you look out, and there are people there in support of what you're doing. So it brings kind of the energy of having an audience, which a lot of times you don't get in a closed studio environment, with the ability to kind of tune it out as a musician if you're needing a moment to yourself, or you're going somewhere with something musically, you still get to have it.
I've been a part of on the other side of the glass, watching. I was over there for Loft Sessions with Cluster Pluck in the studio, and it was just kind of funny because you're watching them perform and they do a song, and then we're all like, it was like, but it was just funny because, they can't hear us,
They can't hear you.
Right, yeah. So I was like...
Unless there's a whole bunch of them clapping, they can't hear
you. I was like, we need a mic out here that goes into there.
But they can see it.
Sure.
They can see it, and that feels good, too.
It just felt funny that we're all out there like, nobody... So, anyway, it was funny. But, I think it's I really like what they're doing. But, anyway, speaking of... you recording now over there, though, seeing some of the still images and things, there's a lot of my favorite people that were also involved in the process with you, and that's what I think is the coolest part about it. I love seeing these projects come up where there's so many of my friends and collaborating. You got of course you had from the musicians themselves to the people, video or photographers like I said, Gaslight even too, and recording part of it all. It's just it's cool to see so many people from that are friends of mine coming together to make something original projects
The message behind that song is powerful, and I feel like the song itself is powerful, but what really gave power to those things and brought something kind of inanimate and in the ether into the world as a thing that we can sit and listen to were all those musicians who showed up. And for people listening that don't know, it was literally a Facebook post of, hey, this is important. Who wants to come in and record with me the day after tomorrow? I mean, with no rehearsal and, and the response was overwhelming and perfect. There were musician friends of mine who were like, Les, what are you doing? You're going to have 12 guitar players and you're going to have 4 drummers, and what are you going to do? And my gut was just like, no, it'll be perfect. Exactly the right people will show up for this. And man, it was exactly that. It was, 2 or 3 guitar players, 3 guitar players. It was 1 cello player, 1 drummer, 1 bass player, 12 to 15 singers, yeah. You know, and four horn players. It was perfect. We recorded it live in three chunks, you know, rhythm section and vocals with me, and then the singers, and then the horns. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of grouped them into those three things. And each, I mean, we knocked that whole thing out in an hour, and there wow. are like 20 musicians playing yeah. music on that thing. Yeah. I mean, it was so exciting and so, you know, fast-paced but still relaxed. Everybody was excited and positive and, you know, and had it together. You know, it really speaks volumes about the level of proficiency and ability that exists in the St. Louis music community mm-hmm. that many people can come together with no rehearsal and do something live that sounds that good.
Sure. Reminded me also like you know, We Are the World kind of thing, you know, like artists coming together to
yeah.
do a voice, you know, and it was just cool, like, to see, you know, first, that was kind of our, it feels like that's kind of our We Are the World for St. Louis, you know, it's like, with the all-star lineup of musicians that you had between, from, you know, like, so musicians or singers or whatever, you know, whoever was all involved,
yeah.
but,
yeah.
So anyway, it was really a cool thing, and I, like I said, it was nice to see, and now that you have the video,
mm-hmm.
With, you know, some people, anybody that hasn't seen, they can see all the people that were playing on it,
right?
But yeah, and then of course, I like the way it really came together nicely on for the you know, all the faces and stuff. And that uh-huh. was really cool for me too, to see like Jeremy and Alonzo and, you know, buddies of mine, and then
uh-huh.
All the you know, people playing on the track too. And
yeah, you know, Lenny Mink was really the mastermind behind the entire video process. I just wanted to write a song, and he was yeah. like, no, you gotta put a video out with this. It'll really hit a lot harder if people
yeah.
can see what you're talking about, you know, and he was absolutely right, and he directed it and filmed a lot of it and got the people together that did the rest of the filming, and a lot of those faces that you're talking about, you know, a handful of them were friends that I said, hey, can you just come be part of this? And of course they were like, yeah, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the singers who were on it did it too, but the majority of those faces you see were, we set up one night on Cherokee Street on a Saturday night inside what's going to be the new B-side club that Francis and Becky are opening down here.
Okay.
Which is going to be an awesome low-key little joint down there. It's going to be great. But it's unfinished, you know, stuff everywhere. They gave us the keys. We basically set up, opened the door, and just pulled people in off the streets, told them what it was about. We're shooting a music video in support of Black Lives Matter. Will you come in and be part of it? And they came in, sat in that chair, did the filming, talked about why they wanted to do it, and then let Lenny do the close-up face shot, you know, that he put yeah. he put a bunch of those together to make those background parts that you see that are so powerful, where you see a
sure.
bunch of people saying the same thing at the same time. So that was all Lenny Mink coming forward with that idea, which turned out really great, and also just highlighted more support for the issue here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So it was great to see that, see it come together like that, to feel that support for the issue. It was cool.
Yeah. So the song is available for free, right?
That's right.
Over at thesongisnow.com.
Correct.
And the music video is also...
Also there.
Or YouTube
mm-hmm.
and everything else, but it all...
Uh-huh. You can find it on my website, too.
Yeah.
All of them are housing that right now. But the place that we created for it to sit is thesongisnow.com.
Yeah, so grab yourself a copy, and, you know, like I said, it's free, so...
yeah, take it.
Share it
take
with
it.
Everybody.
It's for you.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll play it here, and we'll throw it on the end of the show, and people can give...
Great.
If you haven't heard it yet, you stick around. You can hear it. You can catch Leslie every Thursday night.
That's
at,
right.
Yakis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's right here on Cherokee.
Uh-huh. Cherokee and Iowa Streets.
And then Wednesday, October 5th, you'll be at Evangeline's.
Yep.
And October 22nd at Venice with Bottoms Up Blues Gang.
That's right.
And October 28th, back at Evangeline's.
That's right.
Very cool. Yeah, I was over at Venice the other night, and I've been in there just a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
I got on there, like, way late. Like, I went there, and for my very first time, I recorded a podcast with Toe Fire Tribe at the boat bar.
Chris is one of my favorite people in the world.
For sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, we sat at the boat bar, and it was, like, my first time, and I'm, like, taking it all in, like, this is just incredible. Like, just,
it is.
It's just so...
It's an institution in St. Louis.
Well, I'd always heard the name. I just...
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of those things. I just hadn't ever made it over there. And, so I went back. I saw... I was over there for stop by to see Scandaleros there the other night. And, like, just... I went upstairs, and I was taking it all in, and, like, just, because that time I think I really pretty much just stayed on the patio, and, like, and I actually went all around upstairs and downstairs and stuff, and, but, yeah, it's just, it's a really unique place, and.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's cool to see, too, what they're doing for, you know, St. Louis music, because there's so many of my friends are playing up there, you know, and I,
yeah, and, you know, that is just a hub of creative, active creative musical energy in this city. I mean, there are certainly gigs that pay more than the Venice Cafe, but I guarantee most every musician, at least that I know, is happy to go over there and play because of the way that they support creativity in town and how creative the space is itself, the amazing people who work there and run the place, and the awesome people who show up to take the music in. It's got all of those things. So you'll find bands there that, you know, you'd have to pay a lot more to see somewhere else.
And then, are they 6 days a week?
Yeah, 6 days a week.
So there's live music there?
Mm-hmm.
So I see those kind of, you know, print out of the calendars, and I'm like, man, that's, you know, there's a lot of talent rolling through there, so it's really cool to see.
Yeah. And you know what? A really special thing that's been happening at the Venice for the last, you know, year or two now is the Tuesday night blues show that happens there with Jeremy Siegelmoss. It's really an awesome collection of not only the core group that you'll see there every week, but the musicians that come and sit in are just some of St. Louis's finest, young, old, in between, working on it, mastered it, you know, all the people who, wherever they are, they come in and just deliver a really spontaneous, magical show every Tuesday night. It's a late show, so if anybody's going out on Tuesday night, it's after 10, but you won't find a better show on Tuesday night in the city than rolling into the Venice Cafe after 10 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, I think that Toe Fire one I mentioned, I think that night we recorded, we came back in after recording out there.
Yeah, that was a Tuesday, right?
Yeah, it was Tuesday, and you, Jeremy, and Tommy, and...
Eric or Johnny.
Yeah, maybe Eric, yeah. But yeah, I think, anyway, it was just, again, it was just cool to see you all there and stuff, so...
Yeah, and those songs, I mean, we're kind of just coming up with them on the spot. We have a handful that we try to stick with, but we're always venturing outside that too. And it really becomes a fun night. And I think it's fun for people to watch too, because, you know, even the people on stage aren't quite sure what's going to happen, and somehow it always works out.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
If you guys want some older music from Leslie, all that's still available on your website.
It is, LeslieSanazero.com.
And then, we'll throw on, obviously, the new song now. You want to play These Things Do Not Define You also? Or,
sure.
Since we were talking about that with the movie and everything.
Sure, so, sure, yeah, absolutely.
Throw
that'd
be great. On there. And, again, if you want, you got Facebook. You're on Instagram, right?
I'm not. No. You can find me. You can find my website. You can find me on Facebook. Yeah. You can find. I think I have a Bandcamp page, Reverb Nation, like those kind of things.
Sure.
But I think Facebook or the website is the best place to see what's going on.
All right. Yeah. Facebook's a good way. And I think you're on Facebook links to bands in town, which I see a lot. Notifications from you for events. So it's always a cool way to. Keep an eye on where you're playing in town and stuff. So
yeah, definitely.
So thank you so much for doing this.
You bet, Shane. Thanks for having me. This is really fun. I really appreciate it.
Well, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
what they call equality. Stand up together, argue with foes. It's time to put fear up against the wall.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.